for it. One of us should be rapping.
Yeah, I know, right?
If you want to freestyle,
I was waiting for the freestyle. I was waiting for you. You had the look.
Yeah, maybe next episode, if this keeps up.
I was waiting for the right time to jump in, like the double dutch.
So welcome, everyone. This is episode 2 of The Long 2. We made it back. There was just enough people that clicked on the first episode, apparently, to make this happen. So coming to you live, or recorded, I guess. It's Thursday night in Luckett's, Virginia. I'm Matt Deanna.
Steve Harney.
And like I said, we're back. NylonCalculus.com, Hardwood Paroxysm off of iTunes is where you can get this. You probably already got there, though, because you're listening right now. So there's a lot to talk about
since
last week.
There's a lot that's happened.
There's a lot of things that have happened. So we're going to take a little bit of a different go-around on things this time. Let's start with the biggest news.
Yes, Scotty B.
Out. Scott Brooks is out as head coach of the Oklahoma City Thunder after 7 seasons. 7 winning seasons for the most part. Former coach of the year also.
5 of those seasons in the playoffs. 1 of those with a finals appearance.
Absolutely.
Totaled a record of 338 and 207. So why did he get fired?
Yeah, so what's your take on this?
I don't like it. I mean, this year he was nailed with injuries. He had, February he lost Durant for the rest of the year. March, Ibaka gone, at least, you know, they said for the rest of the regular season, but he probably wasn't coming back. And then April, they lost Cantor. I mean, Westbrook battled injuries all year.
Durant didn't even start the season with them.
No. I mean, this is...
He started hurt.
He battled. I mean, this is taking the biggest pieces off of your team and putting them on the injury list, and he still almost made the playoffs.
So you're not a fan. You think Brooks should have stayed?
Yeah, I absolutely think. Now, granted, I know his playoff history probably isn't the best with it. They, you know, a couple one and duns, you know, finals appearance. They didn't play truly well. But you have to also, you know, Thunder got hit with injuries every postseason.
So here's my thing. Seth Partnow from Nylon Calculus, as well as many other sites, has brought this up, so I can't take credit for this idea. But coaching, I don't think we fully appreciate or really know what the true impact of coaching is on an NBA team. So Doc Rivers a while ago was quoted as saying that, you know, he'll design something, but when it really comes down to it, those players are going to get out there and do whatever the hell they want anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So the actual impact that a coach has, I think, is really hard to measure. It can't just be wins and losses, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Brooks has caught a lot of heat, especially in the last few years, because the offensive scheme that they were running was questionable at best. I mean, I'm not a video guy. If I have stats and video to look at and I can choose between the two, I'm probably going to lean towards the numbers, hence why I write for NylonCalculus.com. But regardless, when I've seen video, when I've watched them play, we were at the Wizards game this year, it's really hard to figure out what kind of offense they're running. Most teams, you can watch a few plays and say, oh, they run predominantly pick and rolls, or oh, they run a motion offense. You know what the Spurs run.
You got the triangle. You got all those kind of things.
You know those offensive sets. Brooks arguably never had a system in place. It was, I have two great guys, they're going to take turns and score. He caught a lot of heat for that. And now he's gone. I mean, the thing is, as bad as that may or may not have been, there's a missing link. There's the kind of intangibles of it also. So their player development was relatively strong. His relationship building was relatively strong. It was a lot beyond the X and O's. You know, out of timeouts, you know, just drawing up plays. He didn't seem to be the strongest. And again, they didn't really have much of an offense. So I'm really on the fence about this. We just don't know in the end what really makes a good coach in this league.
Absolutely. Totally agree. What I'm looking at with that is he did have the intangibles off the field. Durant loved them. They were friends on and off the court. They had a great relationship. Westbrook seemed to have a good relationship with them. Where I'm catching the friction and what I think is, you know, was their GM Presti, whatever his name is, I can't
remember. Sam Presti.
Sam Presti. Okay, this is his firing. This will make or break him as a GM, I think, more than this is going to make or break the Thunder. If they do not make the playoffs next year, I think this team, like I said last cast, is done. They're going to blow it up. One of the major pieces is gone.
That's a scalding hot take. I just want to say that's really that's a very.
I mean, they go from how many playoff appearances? You know, this year obviously. This year should not count just due to injuries. I mean, you take that off of obviously it's part of his record, but you take that off of his resume. Yet any team decimated with this many injuries to their star players doesn't make the playoffs. Or if they do, they're a last seed. They're out in the first round.
I think in fairness to the Thunder, we've seen peak Brooks. We've seen Scott Brooks with this core at its best, most likely. When they've been relatively healthy. They made it to the finals. They've made it to the conference finals when people have been injured and all that. But by and large, we've seen most likely the best he can do with that team. So going into next year, KD in looming free agency, Brooks was going to be in the last year of his contract also. They had big decisions coming up. If we've already seen the best of him and they're not going to get any better, then maybe it is time for a change because there is a lot of
time. I think maybe you ride one more year with him.
Okay.
And then you look at that next year. I think he did the same thing. I think Presti did the same thing when he didn't get Harden, and it only took another $5 to $10 million, which...
Unless Harden never wanted to stay, unless Harden wanted to be a superstar.
I mean, that's true. You always have that. And, yeah. You know, he was given an opportunity to become the, you know, a chance at the league MVP like he is now. Would he have gotten that opportunity at the Thunder? No, but it could have... Maybe one more year... You know, give him one more year and they could have gone to the... I think they had a good shot of going to the finals that next season if they kept Harden.
I think one of the dangerous things about keeping him on, because I've been on the fence about this and I understand both sides of it. Royce Young from ESPN brought this up today. He covers the Thunder, has for years. With him being in the last year, if they started like 500, you know, 20 games in or whatever, with KD's free agency looming and all these questions and all the speculation coming, and then they fire him mid-season... Then they've got an even bigger disaster on their hands. So it was like they were trying to preemptively get ahead of this, to use some of his words, which I can understand to a degree. And again, if we've already seen the best that he can do with this core, they've got other decisions to deal with. They've got Durant. They got to figure out this offseason, are they going to keep Cantor?
Absolutely.
Is he worth the money?
Yeah.
What are they going to do on defense? Because that they've still got plenty of issues there.
Totally agree. So I got a question for you.
Yes.
Expectations for the new coach. He doesn't go to the playoffs next year.
Well, they've got a built-in excuse. They're still learning the system and everything. So, honestly, there's no reason why that team shouldn't go to the playoffs as long as they're healthy. That core is legitimately challenging for the best offense in the league when they're healthy. You put Westbrook, Ibaka, Durant together, and whether or not they have Cantor or whatever, they should be a top-five offense, I would think. So, but speaking of which, who do you like as replacements? Who do you think their next head coach could be? Because I have a very strong opinion about this.
I know the big rumor is Ollie.
Kevin Ollie and Billy Donovan.
Donovan may be the strongest push, at least coming out of the college ranks. I don't think he would be bad in that. I think he has a great relationship with his kids in Florida, and he keeps a good relationship with his kids that are currently in the NBA and former players. I think his philosophy meshes well in an NBA style. He likes jump shooters. You got Durant. You got Westbrook, who can knock down jumpers. You have pieces there. I think he could fill in some other gaps that they've been missing. I like Donovan, maybe, as a new guy.
If you ask me for any of the potential head coaching vacancies, the Thunder, who else? The Magic, potentially, because they've got an interim coach.
Mm-hmm.
The Nuggets have an interim coach.
Mm-hmm.
There's vacancies out there.
Yes.
If you ask me for any one of those vacancies who I think their next coach should be, I have one answer across the board.
Who's that?
Mike D'Antoni. Why is this man not coaching in the NBA right now? The NBA is using his style.
He's the one that brought this to the league. Look at the Spurs. Look at the Hawks. Look at the Warriors. They have taken that and perfected it in their own ways. I do not understand why he's not in the league. Whoever gets him will be a lucky, lucky team. Could you imagine what he would do with Westbrook and Durant?
Yeah. No, I agree. That's an excellent...
I would love... I want Mike D'Antoni back in the league. I think he makes the game better. Peak 7 seconds or less Suns was some of the most entertaining basketball you could watch. Now that the league has migrated in mass to that style, bring the man back!
It's mass to that style to a point, I think, though. I think, mm-hmm. You know, are they built to run that exact offense in the inside?
That's fair. I don't know. I don't know for sure, but I just know I'd love to see it.
I would too.
I'd digress a little bit. He just needs to
now with injuries. Are you thinking they could hold up pushing that kind of pace?
That's a whole other topic because injuries are interesting. If you manage the minutes right, yeah.
Yeah. If
you don't play everyone 40, if you use a Spurs like minutes plan and then still run that kind of offense with the right pieces,
I think the Spurs are a freak of nature when you have a team that has the ability to turn it off and then turn it back on when it counts. Not many teams that can do that. Not many players that can do that. I don't think Westbrook is one of those guys that can take his foot off the gas either. I think he's full bore. If he's in, he's going 120%. You know, same with KD. I think he pushes it.
It's true. Yeah. No, there has to be a lot of game management. So we talked about Brooks. We talked about D'Antoni, and you just referenced the Spurs. All of this revolves around Coach of the Year, which was just named this week also.
Absolutely.
So, Coach Bud down in Atlanta. I could say his name, but I'll probably mess it up. So, we're going to go with...
Budenholzer.
Well done. There you go. Named Coach of the Year. What do you think? What's your take on this?
I love it. I think it's a great call. You know, I really love Steve Kerr. I love what he's done with Golden State. I think Steve Kerr inherited a better team. Just look at, okay, when Budenholzer, whatever, we'll just say
Bud,
B.
Coach Bud.
When Coach B took over Atlanta, they were 38-44, squeaking into an 8 seed 2 years ago when he took over. This is his second year. This year, 16-22.
They were injured. Horford was hurt last year, but I see your point. And
they were not a very good team.
He's brought the Spurs system there. They did an entire rebuild.
Flourishing. It is a Spurs. It is a balanced basketball effort. Defensive pace. They are balanced on offense. They have shooters. They have low post play. He's turned them into a version of the Spurs.
I think he's also the interim GM while racist Danny Ferry's out of the league. I think he has that. Like, all jokes aside, he has that role also. So, I mean, you can credit him with some of their moves too. I have a stat for you. Last year I compiled this, so it applies this year also. But since the NBA-ABA merger, which is 39 seasons at this point, approximately 24%, so only 9 times ever, has the coach with the best regular season record by win percentage actually won Coach of the Year.
Oh, wow. That's a good stat.
That's fascinating. Hold
that one.
Wow, I put it together last year, so I just had to update it. But it's interesting because, to me, I thought it was Steve Kerr, hands down. I didn't even think this was a question. Because as good as the Hawks have been and what he's done with them, so he took a fringe playoff team in Atlanta and made it a top seed, right? The same could roughly be said of the Warriors. I mean, they were a middle-of-the-road playoff team to an excellent historic team. So which jump is better, right? From mediocre to good or from good to great? I don't know, but if you win 67 games, I feel like you got to get some recognition there.
Absolutely.
And that's not to discredit anything Bud's done down in Atlanta because it's been great. But
no,
I thought this was Steve Kerr's to lose, honestly.
I totally agree. Coach B took them from the 18th ranked offense, 14th ranked defense, into they have six. I think I want to say they finished around six this year. That's a big jump.
It's great. And here's the thing about these awards: when you pick one, it's not saying that everyone else was garbage, right? That's where a lot of people get caught up in this. That you picked him, so you must think everyone else is terrible. No, they can all be really good, and you have to pick one. You know.
Here's one for you with Steve Kerr. You know, the emergence of Draymond Green this year would that have been, was that a Steve Kerr decision, or was that, that was out of necessity due to injury?
So it was, but it wasn't, because I'm pretty sure it was a conscious decision to actually not start David Lee going forward. So Kerr came in, because one of the biggest issues that a lot of Warriors fans seem to have, at least on Twitter, which is a perfect source for news. I mean, if there isn't anything better than Twitter, I don't know what it is. But
the tweeters.
That Draymond Green was massively underutilized the season prior. And there was a lot of questions of why can this guy not get more time? Every time he's on the court, the plus minus goes through the roof. His contributions are amazing. He can guard five positions, all this other stuff. Kerr, it would seem, unleashed that. But this goes back to my point from before of how much and what can we actually credit back to a coach?
Absolutely.
When it really comes down to it. Here's a related point also is, should we change this award and really make it coaching staff of the year? Because
absolutely,
they've got assistants now that are just covering offense and defense and splitting up the duties. Ethan Strauss said this today on ESPN, like an NFL team. So they've got an offensive coordinator and defense coordinator. A head coach is kind of managing that whole system.
You can see them sitting on the bench. You see half of the plays that the head coach will create during a timeout are, you know, authored by the assistants before that timeout is called. They're sitting there saying, hey, here's what we need to run. We need to do this. We need to get this guy rolling on the pick. This play is working. I like where your head's at with that. And, you know, the head coaches, I think, are smart enough to understand that, you know, this is – it
yeah.
is. They're
– I'm assuming the whole staff takes credit.
Yeah.
Everyone's getting a nice dinner.
Absolutely.
Would you,
absolutely.
So I think we agree on the top two regardless of order, but who would you have thought would have been the third place? And I say this looking at the media voting results from NBA.com. I love that they published the results because in a couple of years – someone's going to take all this and they're going to do some sort of study to show home team bias and show east and west of the Mississippi who votes for what team based on what games they're able to watch. I digress. Who do you like third place for Coach of the Year?
Third place for Coach of the Year. You know, I don't really have a – I love – yeah. Okay, did Jason Kidd really turn the Bucks into what they are? I mean, they snuck into the playoffs –
fourth best defense in the league this year.
Yeah, I mean,
worst record in the whole league the season prior.
It was the worst team in the league. No, was it Kidd?
Great question.
I don't know. If it was, then that's tremendous. Mm-hmm. I've never known Kidd as a, you know, defensive kind of oriented mind in the NBA, but you never know how his philosophy is.
Well, again,
on paper.
The staff, he surrounded himself with the right people to make good decisions. I think in Brooklyn, he picked up on some good defensive strategies from some of his assistants.
He was pigeonholed in Brooklyn, too. He had a lot of players there that kind of just didn't want to play anymore.
Well, yeah, that's for a future topic. But I really like the Brad Stevens pick, potentially, for third place.
I mean,
what he's done with that roster is nothing short of amazing.
I love Brad Stevens. Even in college, he was tremendous, and I think he's done a great job with the Celtics, who have been – I mean, he caught them when they were blown up. They blew up. Here you go. Here's the coaching job.
The Game 3 of the Cavs, Cavs-Celtics game – or series, excuse me, is about to wrap up. It looks like the Cavs are going to hold on. So Boston will probably go down 3-0 at this point. No one's expecting them to win the series, but the fact that not only they made the playoffs, they made the playoffs as a 7 seed, and they're pretty fun to watch, and what we think he's been able to do with that team is pretty awesome, so I
absolutely
give him credit for that.
That's a great choice.
So, speaking of, you brought up Draymond Green before, Defensive Player of the Year.
Do you like it?
Announced today, Kawhi Leonard. So, I thought, in my heart of... So, one could argue that the Warriors are on a path right now to be screwed by every award in the offseason.
Yes.
If Curry doesn't win MVP after these first two decisions, I can't believe it. How do you win 67 games and not pick up a single piece of hardware? That's really weird. Anyway, that's not what you asked me. I thought Kawhi Leonard was like the hipster pick of it'd be kind of cool because no one's going to do it. Let's pick the guy that missed a lot of the season being injured, who is an absolute ball stopper, amazing defender, and is a great defender and will be a great defender, but may not have been the best defender this season, if that makes sense.
Do you like the voting? I'm going to ask that before we get into kind of the battle of the stats between Leonard and Green, but the voting, Leonard won because he got 41 second place votes.
Draymond Green is Al Gore.
Yeah, hey,
I,
He said that today. I can't take credit for most of what I've said so far.
I think it's been
other people's quotes. But
Green had more first place votes.
You would think that matters. So the whole, that doesn't seem to make sense. Why bother? I don't think they do this across the board either in terms of first place, second place, third. For MVP, it's 5 votes, like your top 5. For this, it's top 3. The weight, I don't.
Now you,
one of these kind of loopholes doesn't seem, it seems less than ideal.
Strip them down and just as the defenders as they are, which one do you like better?
Which one do I like better?
I'm just sheer. No team records. Based off of their...
If it's a one-on-one to determine the fate of the world, I'm taking Kawhi Leonard. Realistically. But this season, it's been Draymond Green. I mean, he's guarding Anthony Davis right now. In that series, Anthony Davis is shooting worse. He's just missing more shots when Green's guarding him. And that's hard to argue with. He's scoring a bulk of his points against all the other defenders. Green can legitimately guard 1 through 5.
Yep.
I mean,
I think Kawhi, he has the ability to guard 1 through 5 as well.
Yeah, but he didn't do it this season, I guess, is the ultimate thing. It's like it's almost like a lifetime achievement award proactively or preemptively, I guess, in a way. So this is the thing. There's some clips on the internet that are amazing of when he just picks people's pocket and everything. Amazing to watch, but it just seems like, again, that this was Green's... I thought it was his to lose, just like I thought Coach of the Year was Kerr's to lose. I would have thought Rudy Gobert would have finished second. The Stifle Tower.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been an animal.
This is the first perimeter,
mm-hmm,
really defender that's won since, what, Artest in 2004?
Yeah.
This is going to
sound like some hate, but I'm just really glad DeAndre Jordan didn't win it. Because statistically, he hasn't been there in terms of team defense. Their team defense doesn't necessarily improve or get worse when he's not on the court based off of RPM, so real plus minus, so when he's on and off the court, in terms of, and defensive efficiency, in terms of how that team performs. So when he's off the court, they don't get significantly worse. That means something, right? Also, yes, league's leading rebounder. That's important. Rebounds are obviously important. Leading the league in rebounds, I think in the past, used to be a gateway towards this award, or leading the league in blocks. It shouldn't be anymore. No. We're better than that at this point. So, the voting data is great. Back to one of your original points, I think we're on the right path with this. Maybe some of this gets reformed over time. I don't know, but I thought it was Green's to lose. Congratulations to Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah, right? Congratulations. I think I think either way you went with this choice was a good call between these two. I like the choice. Green would have been my pick. I just love what he's done with the way he's given them a swag that they needed.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and that's...
That's true. Their offense was talked about all year, but I believe they finished as the number one defensive efficiency.
Yep.
The fact that they were so high in both is phenomenal.
Absolutely.
That's been great. So you touched on this before when we talked about Kid with the Nets last year. Let's talk a little bit about that Brooklyn-Atlanta series. And I specifically want to talk about Kyle Korver.
Yes.
Because have you been following him much this year?
I mean, from when I play, I traditionally like to run exactly like Korver does. Send me around screens, give me open looks, you know, from around the arc. What did he finish? What was his percentage this year? Did he finish right around 49% from three?
50%, I believe.
That is insane.
That is
more than 450 three-pointers he took.
0.492% from three-point. He made 221 three-pointers, 49%.
The guy is...
I like that you compared yourself to him, though. Oh, that's good. The Kyle Korver of this podcast.
Hey.
I am the Josh Smith of this podcast, and you are the Kyle Korver.
Our shooting percentages aren't exactly the same.
Throw those lobs. That's all I know. But I've got a theory with Kyle Korver. I started to dig into this a little bit the other day. So in comparing him to previous shooters, because 49% is ridiculous and unheard of, and the way he gets those points, the way he moves around, and Sportview published something called a gravity score this year. So the actual rate at which he pulls the defense towards him and frees up space for everyone else. So how close his defender stays on him and how much he actually pulls them away from the play. it's out of control. And for being, I mean, he was an all-star, but for being a relatively non-superstar, the amount of sway he has and guides that offense without even holding the ball is kind of phenomenal.
Absolutely.
And I liken it to, he's taken kind of the Ray Allen model and the Rip Hamilton model as predecessors before him. Late career Ray Allen. Because Ray Allen, people forget, like the He Got Game Ray Allen could get to the basket and could drive. End of his career, he became just a three-point shooter and an amazing one at that. But that model of running around screens, Ray Allen, Rip Hamilton model, I think Kyle Korver started to perfect it. So I looked at a couple of Ray Allen seasons in particular. So his 11-12 season is the year he shot at his highest, which was at 45%, which was phenomenal. When you start to break down some of the stats, like per 100 possessions, it's not even that close in terms of Allen scored more points, but offensive rating, so the efficiency when they were on the floor, Kyle Korver's at a 122, Ray Allen's at a 111. 111 is ridiculous.
Well, 122 is...
And Kyle Korver's at 122, that's insane. So that's the year Ray Allen shot at his best, right? The year Ray Allen made his most, he made 199 in his 08-09 season. So both of these are with the Celtics, that late career Ray Allen. When you compare those stats between the two of them, both of them had a 122 offensive rating and a 106 defensive rating. These two are almost identical. So if Kyle Korver can take one of basically both of Ray Allen's best three-point shooting years, mash them up into one, that's what he's done at this point. That is ridiculous. That is ridiculous. Insane. The Nets can't guard him. They have no business being on the floor with him because he still gets open looks. It's a thing of beauty watching him get freed absolutely. Up for shots on a break, whatever the case is.
It's an amazing thing to remember. This guy's 6'7", so you can't slack out. Typical shooters aren't that tall. They're in between that 6'2" to 6'5" kind of mark. 6'7", he's got long arms. He shoots it. You know, he's got extremely quick release. He doesn't need to be right up at the line either. All he needs is a little bit of space, 2 or 3 feet from that line, and he can light it up. He doesn't need a lot of time to set his feet. He's quick. He's quick off that turn. He's a wide base. If you ever seen him, you know, really lock down and shoot, his legs are they exaggerate kind of his base, you know, width.
His form is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the same every time. He's a phenomenal shooter. The way he gets it, you know, it's you can't say anything more than what you said. I mean, just those stats.
It's interesting though because it's taken this long in his career. I mean, he's in about his 13th. He's been in the league for 12 years. I'll finish that sentence undetermined. He's been in the league for 12 years, and it's taken this long for a team to figure out how to use him best and a system to really revolve around him. My point being, everyone that watches a Hawks game knows that offense is predicated around his movement and the space he frees up and getting him shots, right?
Absolutely, yes.
How many three-pointers do you think he took in game one of this series?
Game one of this series, I think he took 5.
He made 5.
He made 5.
Took 11.
11, 5 for 11.
That man shoot 11 three-pointers when he's the best three-point shooter in the league and he makes half of them.
Yeah.
And of course he did. Of course he made 5, right?
Yep.
Game two, he still took 7.
Yep.
And he made 3. You know he's going to do it. I think that's a sign of greatness. If everyone knows you're going, just like James Harden going left, everyone knows you're going to, just like Josh Smith shooting a mid-range jump shot, everyone knows you're going to do it, and it still happens, and you're still effective at it. That is unbelievable. That blows my mind. So, Kyle Korver, I don't know.
Question.
I don't think, yes.
Throwing it out there, better shooter than Curry, yes or no? Who would you take in a system like that? But let's not forget, I'll take Curry's ability to get his shot open off the dribble out, and I'm talking just a pick and pop shooter.
Pick and pop? I think I go Korver.
You think?
If it's one on one or a fast break and Curry's the ball handler, like Curry, like you just said, Curry creating his shot, I will take that over anyone in the league right now. That weapon that you have to start guarding at half court because he's that deadly is borderline unguardable. Korver is being maximized in a system that just accentuates everything he's good at. Curry, similarly, except he's given room to create and make stuff happen. So in the right system, they both are unstoppable.
Absolutely.
I think I like Curry better in terms of just a pure shooter. But pick and pop, I'd probably say Korver.
I mean, you're moving. He's coming off screens. I think they both have the unique ability to release that jump shot so fast that defenders can't get around those screens fast enough to really guard them. You know, Korver has another advantage on top of it. He's 6'7". Curry's shot is, I want to say it's almost more accurate. He's earlier in his career than Korver, mm-hmm. so once Curry slows down a little bit, is not able to get that step he has. He's obviously going to translate into more of a role shooter kind of thing, point guard shooter.
I've got the answer. So I've got science for you. You ready for science?
I'm ready.
So this week in Nylon Calculus, I've written like 3 articles. I've been busy. They weren't long, but I wrote 3 different articles about irrational conclusions that we can start to derive after 1 or 2 games of each series, right? So things that we can learn in terms of space. So the space that people shoot from, where they occupy, all those key contributors, right? So I think both of us would agree that Steph Curry can pick and pop with the best of them, obviously, right? If he's not number one, if Korver's number one, he's still in the top 3.
Yeah, they're 1 and 2.
Right, yeah. Throw Klay Thompson in there too, whatever, right? So Curry can do what Korver's best at almost as good as Korver does, right? Last night when I watched that Nets-Hawks game, Korver came down on a break. He was the lead ball handler, stopped, popped from the wing, missed everything. It went clang off the... Not clang, it just bounced off the backboard. So clearly, Steph Curry is the better 3-point shooter. Because that one shot that I saw just determines everything. That is science. That it is can't science. Be refuted that he did not hit the rim.
Irrefutable.
It was a terrible shot. There we go. Curry wins. I'll take Kyle Korver regardless. Next topic. So speaking of shooters, especially from long range or the long two, if you will, LaMarcus Aldridge.
He's a beast.
LaMarcus Aldridge is a beast.
And he's getting no help whatsoever. Why is nobody playing? Where is anybody seeing Lillard?
It's really sad. So Lillard has been on a little bit of a slide towards the end of the season in general. But
that 1-2 punch should be enough to get them in at least one of these games.
Yes. So their offense is largely predicated. So throughout the season, in the second half of the season, I was studying Damian Lillard, right? I started doing predictions for how many shots he was going to take each game and where they were going to come from, right? When I started looking at that data, his game is at the rim and behind the arc. There's nothing wrong with that. There's plenty of players. That's the new model, right? And
his no long two?
It turns out no long two, but I still love him. It's okay. He's still a fan. He is a friend of this podcast if he wants to be, regardless of no long twos. But his game, that is his game, is threes and at the rim, right? It's hard, and he's a slow starter a lot of times, too. There were quarters where he'd take no shots in the first quarter or very few and make none of them, whatever the case is, right? LaMarcus Aldridge is their rock. He's their consistent piece, right? Well, he's going against that front line right now in Memphis that it's a lockdown defense. I mean, a team is predicated on defense. You've got Wes Matthews hurt, Aaron Aflalo hurt, Damian Lillard being ice cold, Nicholas Batum, you never quite know what to expect, and Robin Lopez doesn't score. That offense is all LaMarcus Aldridge. He had 32 points the other night.
And 14 rebounds.
But he had 32 points on 34 shots. Yeah. Whenever your shot attempts are more than your points.
That's never a good
thing. We can't fully respect the points, no. Though, unfortunately.
He did get his own rebounds a few times. So
he did.
That counts.
Yeah, shot attempts too. But yeah. And when I looked at his space, so after the first game, in terms of where he normally shoots, he's a king of the mid-range. I will stand by this. He is the second coming of Dirk Nowitzki. No one probably wants to hear that, but I think he is. His mid-range game is phenomenal. Can't be beat. Some of his moves are borderline unguardable like Dirk. He's definitely trending in that direction, right? Dirk's an all-time great. He hasn't been able to get those looks because he was having to shoot threes at the same time. When I studied his first, when I studied his shots in game one, he had areas from 3-point. He can shoot that shot, and it's a good weapon as like and then I can also do this. It should not be the primary area he's shooting from. They have weapons to handle that.
Agreed.
But when Alan Crabb is starting, that puts a lot of pressure on him to perform.
So, with that being said, I think we both agree He's going to be the top power forward free agent next year, correct?
Yes. Yes.
Right now, it seems that the Spurs want him. If the Spurs are knocking at my door and I'm Aldridge, who would... I mean, how perfect does he fit in that scheme?
So I think you got a couple things going on here. Early in the year, I think without a doubt, the prevailing logic was he was going to re-sign. I think he even made comments about it, whatever the case is, right? That was the whole thing. He's staying in Portland. He's going to be a lifer. That apparently the sentiment has started to change. There was an article written in one of the local Portland news sites. I think it was in the past few days, that was pretty well sourced, I believe, that talked about, well, maybe he's not going to stay. And everyone always goes back to the Texas teams. He's from Texas. He's always been, I think, very proud of his Texas heritage. It seems like it gets talked about all the time. If the Spurs made a run at LaMarcus Aldridge and Tim Duncan was able to pass the torch like that, you move Duncan to center, bring Splitter off the bench, LaMarcus is their next power forward, that is trouble. You build around Kawhi.
It bolts them right Aldridge. To, I mean, they're top,
they
top
never
three,
rebuild.
Top four in the NBA.
They never go through a rebuild.
That fit is perfect for them. It makes complete sense for the Spurs, and it makes complete sense for Aldridge. I mean, just looking at this playoff series right now, he's okay. He has taken a lot of shots. Give you that.
You
said, he's had to take these shots. Nobody's playing around him. I don't think he really has a lot of confidence in the rest of the Blazers to kind of, you know, help him really put. Are they going to push over this hump anytime soon? And when you get a team like the Spurs, who, if you were to leave, you're virtually a lock to go make a deep run into the playoffs, if not into the finals.
Here's my concern.
In your first year over there.
Here's my concern. Before the All-Star break, I thought the Blazers were legit. I thought they were one of the top three teams in the West, and I thought that they were going to be title contenders, which was awesome because that team, that franchise has been through heartache. Greg Oden, Brandon Roy. I mean, go back to Bill Walton. Like, it's been a struggle. And it's been so good to see them play well. Now, Wes Matthews is hurt, and he's going to be a restricted free agent. Brook Lopez is a free agent, and turns out so is his brother, Robin Lopez, who plays on this team. So I'll try to be relevant.
It's all right.
Robin Lopez is going to be a free agent. LaMarcus Aldridge is coming up on free agency. All those pieces right there, they're in flux right now. There's a lot of moving parts there that they're going to have to figure out. If Aldridge leaves and Lopez signs somewhere else, and they're a playoff team, so it's not like they're getting an early draft pick.
No, and getting swept is not going to help anyone's case to stay.
You don't know what to expect from Wes Matthews coming off an injury that gruesome. That's heartbreaking.
I think if the Spurs come knocking, he's gone. You have to go.
That's scary.
I mean,
just, to think
that
about.
Makes in great news for the Spurs if they get him.
Yeah, I mean, he was 13-34 in Game 1. He was 7-20 in Game 2. So he shot 38% and 35% in those games. That's a lot of shots, which is fine for the most part, but those percentages are...
He's added 14 rebounds in each of those games and 4 blocks in each of those games.
My thing is, he just... The scoring load has been all... I mean, he had... They've been in the 80s both games, I think. So when you have 34 points and the team only scores like 86...
He's not built to shoot that much. He needs to chop half of that off, and he shouldn't have to shoulder that load. I mean,
I'm okay with him putting up 34 shots when they score 110, 120 points. That's great. That's great, then. That's great. Because I'm telling you, that mid-range game... So the long two is the most hated shot in basketball, and I get that. But not all long twos are created equal. This is my rant to save the Josh Smiths of the world. But LaMarcus Aldridge shooting a long two is a lot better than most other people shooting a long two, which is fine.
Absolutely.
And his game is never quite been fully appreciated. I wrote this week that he's either a quiet, below-the-radar superstar, or he's just like... You don't even think about him because he's just kind of irrelevant to you. He's never really gotten the credit for being a perennial all-star and just a dominant offensive player.
What about what he's done to himself to become that? He's put on, I think I saw an article the other day, he's put on more than 41 pounds of muscle in the last 4 or 5 years.
That's crazy.
to become this person, because he was a skinny guy coming out, and he was a skinny guy in his first few years in the NBA, and he's getting pushed around. Mm-hmm. He put that weight on and turned himself into a perennial all-star.
He's a force, and his game is, I feel like it's massively, it's criminally underrated. It's not fully appreciated. Part of this, I would argue, is we're sitting in Luckett's, Virginia. How many Blazers games did you watch live this year? This is an indictment on your viewing habits.
I couldn't tell you. Literally, because I don't think I watched one.
The East Coast bias is real. I hate to say it, but it is. Like, I can't stay up late enough. I missed the whole game two of Spurs-Clippers the other night. Because it didn't start till 10:30. Was it the 10:30 start last night?
Yeah.
I can't do it. Yep. I couldn't stop. I wanted to.
No, it's...
I'm an old man. And I have old man tendencies. And some nights, I just can't do it. And... I saw the beginning of it. I did see some of the beginning. But you can't see a team like the Warriors normally. They get a ton of national games this year, which is great. When they haven't in the past, you don't see a lot of them. Same with the Blazers. They're always on that late. You don't get to appreciate that game.
You got to wait for those Saturday and Sunday games.
You know, based in Bristol, Connecticut, it was an Eastern Sports Network.
Mm-hmm.
That bias is somewhat real. I don't think he gets the credit he deserves. I'll be curious to see what he does in the offseason. I feel bad for them right now because I don't know how they're going to win a game in this series. I'm sure the Rose Garden, or formerly known as the Rose Garden, is going to be rocking for Game 3. But they have not been able to generate offense. And their defense isn't what it was earlier in the year. So
I hope they grab one. I think if there's a sweep, you know, like you said, with all the flux, it's definitely not going to help anything. And, you know, like I think I've said maybe six times before, if the Spurs are knocking on your door, you go.
So speaking of free agency and sweeps, the next thing I wanted to talk to you about was a point guard in Dallas. I promised last week we would never talk about Raymond Felton again because you brought his name up. So we're not talking about him, but a different point guard that didn't play in Game 2, or didn't play much at least. I think he played 34 seconds in Game 2.
You must be talking about the Raging Cajun.
Rajon Rondo. So what are you thinking about Rajon Rondo these days?
I'll be blunt. He's irrelevant. His game's passed him by. He's not worth giving any time. His jump shot has not improved. I mean, he hasn't shot a jump shot since when? So what is there? He's a cancer to the locker room. He quit. You can't pay a quitter because, I'm sorry, even in the NBA where there is people who slack and do, you know, they'll quit through the season and things like that. He did it in a playoff game because he doesn't like the coach. Why do you want that around? You can't. I think
there's a back injury here. He is hurt.
Okay, he's... Yeah.
I just want to... Rick Carlisle's comments were the most damning of them all. When he was asked about him ever being in a Dallas uniform again, he just said, I doubt it. First of all, honesty!
Finally.
Oh my gosh!
Thank you.
It's so great to just hear... No, I don't think it's going to be... Like, thank you, Rick Carlisle, but it's so shocking when you get that. Rajon Rondo is... a very complicated player to try to put into context. Because how do we fully appreciate what he has accomplished? You know, he was the fifth wheel. He was originally kind of the fifth wheel of the big three in Boston, right? And then over time, it became, no, he's the one driving the train on this. And they're just kind of hanging on at the end. There was the playoff Rondo mystique where he always excelled on the national TV games and the playoff games. And the stats back that up too. Everything would be significantly increased. You're right. His game does not jive well with 2015 NBA basketball.
It doesn't.
A ball dominant point guard is not very common anymore. It's hard to thrive in some of these systems. The Mavs had the best offense in the year. They were number one in offensive efficiency before that trade. They were their offense was a thing of beauty with the spacing and the pacing and the passing. They were just moving and cutting, finding open shots. Everyone could make a shot. It was great. They took a gamble. I don't think it was necessarily bad that they took that gamble because they weren't getting over the hump as they were, probably, as that top offense.
You mean the gamble on taking a guy who was already suspected of quitting on his team?
Well, they did it for defense, because as good as their offense was, their defense was suspect. So they did it to get a lockdown defender, someone that could guard James Harden in the postseason, that kind of guy.
And they got that in the beginning of the series, kind of, sort of. But an 8-second violation? He got an 8-second violation the other day. I don't remember the last time I saw one of those in professional basketball.
I think he's done.
But begs the question. So, he's a free agent this year. He's clearly not coming back to Dallas. Where does he go? What do you think are possible destinations?
Basement dweller who just needs to sign somebody that doesn't really care, looking for a lottery pick next year. I think you sign him on the cheap. I think you know he's going to be, you know, he's going to make a mess of your locker room. So you sign him to the cheap and you boot him after the next year. I think there is a lot of point guard talent. Maybe not as much coming out this year, but in next year through college, I think through other free agents, I think other guards that are in the league that maybe not getting the playing time that have. I would much rather take a stretch two or a two guard and turn them into a point guard rather than put him on the floor. I don't think, like you said, his style of basketball doesn't bode well in this kind of, you know, 2015 style of basketball.
Here's what I've done for you. We're going to rapid fire this.
Do it.
I've got all the teams listed right here. We're going to start at the very bottom. I just want to hear yes or no off of each of these. Is there a possibility that this team signs Rajon Rondo in the offseason?
And what are we talking about contract-wise? Because you cannot sign him to a big contract.
Will they offer him a contract? Yes or no? Rapid fire. You ready?
Yes.
Minnesota Timberwolves.
No.
New York Knicks.
Yes.
On the list. We're going to do an entire podcast on the Knicks in the offseason, and it's going to be fun because it's just going to be self-deprecating and terrible.
I say yes only because he doesn't shoot, and he'll run the ball, and he'll pass it to Anthony every time so he can shoot.
They're also, so they love their names, and they're a disaster of a franchise, so it's perfect. Philadelphia 76ers.
No.
Los Angeles Lakers.
No.
Oh, no. Everyone said he had breakfast with Kobe.
Kobe likes the ball too much.
They had breakfast with Kobe. You know what's funny? Steve Nash was pretty much a ball-dominant point guard, and we saw how well that didn't work. Kobe is advocating to get Rondo, allegedly, right? And everyone's saying that Rondo's going to the Lakers. Really? I don't understand how those two actually coexist. Anyway, so you say no, I think that's bold, because I want a source, by the way, because people with sources say Lakers. I'd love to have a source someday, but regardless. Orlando Magic.
No.
New York. Sacramento Kings.
Maybe.
That's fine. Denver Nuggets.
No.
Detroit Pistons.
No.
Charlotte Hornets.
No.
Miami Heat.
No.
Utah Jazz.
No.
Indiana Pacers?
No.
Brooklyn Nets?
Time's no. up!
Phoenix Suns?
No.
And this interruption has been brought to you by my 4-year-old. All right, so then there you have it. It's either the Knicks, maybe the Lakers, maybe the Kings. That's about it. There's not a market for that style of player at this point.
There's not.
That's really sad to think about.
I don't think it's his style of play. It's not his style of play as much as it was his attitude. The way he did it. You quit on your team. You quit in a playoff game. The one time of the year, you got 80-something other games to quit. One game. Push through an injury. Show that you want to take your team over the top. If you want to get that contract, you want to stay. If you're fighting with your coach, whatever. You know? Push through that game, you'll get your contract somebody else, or somewhere else.
Now it's real time's up.
Well, all right, there you have it. That means we need to wrap up soon, so we're going to have to rapid fire the rest of this. I'll leave you with one last thought, though. Who would have thought when that trade happened that when it involved Rajon Rondo, Brendan Wright, and Jay Crowder, that the one player of those three that would play the most games in the playoffs this season would be Jay Crowder? Of the Boston Celtics. Enough said. All right.
Going to the team where he came from.
We got about two more things we want to talk about. One, the Hack or Whatever style. So right now it's Hack or Jordan. I just got in a conversation on Twitter with Seth Partnow about this, who wrote a fantastic article on Nylon Calculus today. Go read it right now. Pause this. Go read it. Come back when you're done reading it. He talked about the Hack or Whoever method and does it actually work. I'll paraphrase it for you right now, because I know our listeners just paused and read the whole thing, so this will just be a summary for them. That
The Clippers' offensive rebounding rate on foul shots is more than double the league average. So they get offensive rebounds when their team shoots more than twice as often as teams most of the time do. Normally it's about 11% of the time that offense gets the rebound on a foul shot. They get it like 22% of the time when DeAndre Jordan is shooting. It starts to put into question the whole strategy. What do you think? Do you like... And the other part of that conversation Seth and I started to have was that Hack-a-Shack... That's going to be really hard to edit out.
I know. That's going to be
really tricky. We might just have to leave it in. I don't know. Well, anyway, does it even work? Is it worth it? Do you like it?
It's honestly, it's been a strategy that's been going on, I think, in all levels of basketball. Little League, NBA, and everywhere and anywhere in between.
You got so blatant, though.
You got a freak of nature on the on offensively. Who shoots? What does he shoot? You know, typically under the glass.
In the 40s, it's bad.
No, I mean when he, yeah, but when he gets the ball where he's comfortable under the basket.
Like 70%.
Right. Yeah. Or you put him on the free throw line where he's 30s. You take that rebound percentage. You take that, you know, okay, he might get one. And plus, it's something that once you don't have to commit to it. You can commit to it for a span of two possessions, one possession, five possessions. I think it's a good strategy if it works, and it's something that you can say, okay, he's killing us on the inside, or he's killing us on these rebounds. Put him in the area that he cannot, or he's least likely to hurt you on the free throw line. And if you have the depth to do it, why not?
Do you like it as a fan?
Hell no. I think it's well, okay. Let me say if it's working and I'm cheering for it, then I'm all about it.
The Celtics in the first quarter tonight were doing the Hacka player, the Hacka whatever. They were doing Tristan Hack Thompson tonight on Tristan Thompson in the first quarter. So the strategy is prevalent. It is here. It is something teams will exploit. Do you think that there needs to be rule changes?
I don't think so. I think it needs to... No, because free throws are a common fundamental that every single person playing basketball has been taught from day one. Learn how to shoot your free throws. If they don't learn how to shoot their free throws and make them consistently, at least at 50% or more, then that's their own fault. That's the team's fault. You're putting them out there. You want to play them? You got to do this. I understand now from the NBA on an entertainment level that this is something that fans get upset with. It's only half the fans that get upset with this.
It might be three quarters because length of game starts to matter also.
It does.
I don't want to go to a three-hour game.
No, and when you're there, it's not that fun because you're watching free throws. And when you're watching TV, you start seeing every single commercial ever made because it's a commercial break for every time you have a free throw attempt.
I agree with you. I don't want to see a rule change just because I don't like the idea of doctoring it all for a handful of players. I think you got to exploit it until the other team corrects for it. So I don't think there's a good solution for it right now, but it still makes for an interesting strategy. I think Jordan took about 24 free throws in game one,
which
is insane. I mean, it's going to keep happening until something gives.
It's a quiet day for James Harden.
It was. So before my four-year-old comes in and tells us we're done again, what we're going to do real quick, last episode we did some predictions. I just want to hear your confidence on each of these, right? So Golden State's playing tonight. They're up 2-0. You predicted a sweep. I said in five. How do you still feel about a sweep?
They're going to sweep.
They're going to sweep? All right. I think if there was a game to take, the Pelicans take tonight. They're at home. It's the Smoothie Center. Anthony Davis's first playoff home game. Everything you can't quantify, so everything that makes sense to my brain are all the reasons why the Pelicans might have a chance of winning. Not that they will win, that if they were going to win a game, it would the best chance would seemingly be this one.
They're a good young team.
Because if they lose this one, I don't know about game four. All right, Memphis-Portland. You said Memphis in six, I said Memphis in seven. How do you feel about that now?
I'm actually a little hesitant. I think it's going to be Memphis in five.
I feel miserable about Memphis in seven. I'd love it to last that long. I don't think it's going to. Spurs-Clippers. You said Spurs in seven. I said Spurs in six. apparently.
It's tied at one.
The only series is tied at one. Everything else has been ugly.
I think they're going to go. They're going to go back and forth. This is going to be a long drive. This is going to be the best series of the first round.
Clippers have to take one in San Antonio then. No, they don't.
No, they don't.
I said that. Math hurts sometimes. It's late.
No, but I think if the Spurs take both in San Antonio, I think they'll walk away in six.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to split.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. Rockets, Mavs. You had Rockets in six. I had Rockets in seven. How do you feel?
I think it's going to be Rockets in. It may be a Rockets sweep, actually. After watching the game, what was that? Like 14 alley-oops in a row? That was absurd. That was. Josh Smith.
I love it. That game made me happy. He was dunking. He was dishing.
He looked like Josh Smith the old.
That's the Josh Smith when I said it last week. When used properly in small doses, that's the kind of beauty he can bring your game. It made me so happy to see.
Defense, offense, he was everywhere.
Josh Smith. I will remain loyal to the whatever. I don't feel good about it either. It's probably going to be a sweep, it seems like. Atlanta. I keep wanting to say New Jersey. Atlanta, Brooklyn. We both said Atlanta in five. How do you feel about that?
I think it's going to be an Atlanta sweep.
Do you?
Brooklyn looks horrible.
Those games are surprisingly close, though.
They are, but they look so bad. I've never seen Brooklyn looks like a horrible team.
They don't belong in the playoffs.
No.
So it's probably a sweep. You're right. All right, so the Cavs just won. They're up 3-0 in the series. You said sweep. I said Cavs in five. How do you feel about a sweep?
They're going
to
sweep.
Again, similar to Portland, similar to the Pelicans. If there was a game to win for the Celtics, it was probably game three. It stayed close for most of the game. They did not win. Prize on the line for game four. Maybe that's the one they get out. I have nothing to justify or back.
I hope they get one, but the Cavs, yeah, this was the game to take.
Bulls, Bucks, you said Bulls in five. I said Bulls sweep. How do you feel?
The Bulls are continuing to play a little. I think they're getting better and better, so I think they sweep.
Which is what I said. I love the Bulls' offense. I am infatuated with it. The Spurs are beautiful to watch, so are the Clippers. The Bulls aren't as beautiful to watch, but I love their offense. I wrote about it multiple times this year. The spacing on offense, those players were meant to play together. They all shoot from different spots. It brings a tear to my eye.
They're getting better and better, too.
I irrationally love their offense. I'm looking forward to Bulls Cavs. I still think they sweep. I feel good about that. Last series, the one we could talk for another hour about, but we're 57 minutes in, so we probably won't. Wizards, Raptors. You said Wiz in six. I said Wiz in seven. How do you feel about that?
I think it's going to, I would call a sweep, but I don't think I could quite trust the Wizards. They are playing great.
Playoff Randy Whitman. He's another coach in the playoffs.
Where did all of a sudden the Paul is, throwing Paul Pierce as a stretch four? Where did that come from? All of a sudden he's just like here, and the Raptors don't know what to do. And then Beal is finally, when he is aggressive, he is a thing of beauty to watch. And
so are you saying less than six?
I am saying, I'm saying five.
You know what that noise is?
Sweet. I think the Raptors may steal one game and then the Wiz will take it home.
That's fair. Playoff Randy Whitman combined with playoff Otto Porter is a force to be reckoned with.
Yes, it is.
And on that note, Steve Harney, episode 2 is in the books.
Yes, sir. You did Matt, it. Have a good night.
Thanks for listening. Enjoy the rest of the games. Ideally, as long as we're still around and Nylon Calculus doesn't ditch this podcast completely, we will see you next week.
Yes,
or
sir.
You'll hear from us next week.
Absolutely.
The long 2. All right. Bye.